So as I mentioned, the Besborough story has moved on to another level now, where planning permission for flats has been allowed or will be allowed. So you're looking at a lot of development down there were to go ahead. It would be 140 apartments on the site of the former mother and baby institution. And if you've been asking or wondering, was there ever a dig or a scan or anything like that done down in Besborough by anybody over the decades? The answer to that is no. That was never, ever done. Nothing like that. The most that you can say that was ever done down there was the official commission who carried out all of the investigation into mother and baby's home did a map-based assessment. That's all. Looking at maps and studying, I suppose, what you would call maybe a cartography of the area. But we know of 923 children associated with Besborough from birth to a very young age who died between 22 and 98. But there are only burial records for 64. Many people think this is beyond disrespectful to build anything on the land and that it should just be a memorial. Now, I have to say that Cork City Council, according to Catherine Corliss, carry a lot of shame for this, and the planners. And in time, they will be remembered for this. How could they, God forgive them, another person said, have they no soul, no heart? How could they think of building on land where children are missing and may well be buried? They're the words of Madeleine Walsh, whose son William was 6 months old when he died in Besborough in 1960. But everybody has a story to tell, and amongst them is Anne. Anne, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
What do you, you were born in Besborough and like many small babies adopted. What do you make of this news?
I'm actually not surprised, to be totally honest. I am shocked and disappointed, but I'm not surprised. I feel that not enough was done in years gone by to protect the Besborough grounds. And I feel that it was like a political football. Everyone was blaming everybody else. A CPO should have been done.
Okay, so a compulsory purchase order. Do you think it's too late for that? Because I was just reading in the Echo this morning where Micheál Martin last week stated that his view was the Cork City Council should have purchased the Besborough site and that the government will now decide how to respond if the planning is upheld. Now, the planning has been upheld, which means that, in theory, they can build apartments on the site. Now that that decision has been made, isn't Micheál Martin now saying that the government will intervene?
They'll have to intervene, I would say, with all the outrage. He's been very quiet, though, since the announcement, I've noticed. There's been no statement by him, which I'm quite surprised by. But just a slight correction, Neil, it wasn't 140 that was granted. It was 106. Block C was rejected.
Okay. Well, it's important you correct that, because I'm quoting newspaper reports this morning of 140. But if the original
application was 140... Okay. But 106 was granted.
Does that make a huge difference, though, to be honest with you, in the scheme of things?
Not particularly,
okay,
no.
106.
No, not particularly.
And do you mind me telling us a little of your life story?
So I was born in Besborough in the early 70s. I was placed with my adoptive family at 7 weeks old. I was basically ordered in that they wanted a specific looking child and I fit the bill.
Okay. Did they pay for that?
Yes.
Well, when they say specific looking child, what was their preferred child?
They preferred dark hair, brown eyes, so that I'd kind of fit in with the family.
Okay. There was a cost of that. Many people had to pay, not just, you know, Irish families or husbands and wives,
yes,
but, you know, some children went to America and American parents paid. Yeah.
Yeah, they would have been classed as donations, but money was handed over.
Yeah, well, it's still handing over money. And how was that for you?
I didn't have a good childhood. I had an adoring father. My mother... I don't think she bonded at all. There was no love there, really, to be honest. She was very strict, very cruel. She had had her own issues, and I suppose they were never really addressed. She was an alcoholic and manically depressed. She had been sexually abused by a family member, and that continued on with me when I turned 8.
When you were 8 years old, you were sexually abused by a family member?
Yeah. And that continued for 4 years. Every week for 4 years.
God, that must have been a very, very scary, hurtful time for you.
Looking back on it, there was no talk, there was no talk about sex or anything like it. So at the time, you didn't know what was happening to you. You couldn't verbalise it, so there's no way you could tell anybody because you didn't know that it was completely wrong. You just knew that you didn't like it and it was extremely painful.
That was up to the age of 12?
Up to the age of 12, yes.
Forgive me now, some people might find this very disturbing, but and I appreciate that I don't cause any hurt or pain with regards to bringing back the memories to you, but did you end up pregnant at 12?
That's correct, yes. Yeah.
Did anybody know? Go ahead, sorry.
I ended up pregnant at 12 and miscarried.
Did you tell anybody about the pregnancy?
No, because at that age I didn't actually know I was pregnant. All I knew at the time was that I was in horrendous pain and I was bleeding. I bled on the sitting room carpet and my adoptive mother basically dragged me up the stairs to my bedroom and locked the door, and I was left on my own.
Did she say anything?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
I think she knew what was happening.
She did. She did indeed.
That's horrific. Yeah. How do you process that as a child? Like, God almighty, must have been awful, awful.
I suppose fear. At the end of the day, it's fear, and I think there's a massive, the brain has a massive coping mechanism in that you shut things out. You kind of block things. You know what's happening is cruel. You know what your body is going through is horrendous. But because you can't verbalize it, you try to shut it all down, to be honest. I think that's kind of the best way to describe it to some extent.
Listen, you're a child. You know, you wouldn't know how to verbalize it or who to talk to or, you know, how to look for help. Or like you say that your adopted father was a good man, was he?
Very much so. Yeah very much so. And
so clearly he was he aware of your childhood and what was happening?
No. He did kind of get an inkling of it when I was about 10. And from that day on, I wasn't meant to be brought out. But my adoptive mother continued to bring me out.
Okay. We won't identify the individual, although, you know, I believe that individual would have passed by now, yeah?
Correct.
Okay. So at the age of 12, how was the other aspects of your life? I mean, did you have brothers and sisters? Did you have friends? Were you able to get along in school, considering the hell you were living in?
I was. I was extremely shy, painfully shy, easily led. I wasn't a happy child by any manner of means, but I did. I had good friends. I had very good friends. I suppose, you know, outwardly, I seemed happy enough, but just painfully shy.
Yeah.
And I think the shyness was actually a mask.
Oh, a totally introverted personality, considering your rearing and your upbringing.
Correct. Yeah.
And did you leave home as fast as you could?
Yes. I left at 17.
Where did you go?
I was lucky enough to get into college at the time, and I that was kind of like a new beginning for me, because all of a sudden I was away from it all, and I began to be somewhat happy, and I enjoyed college life immensely. And then when I finished college, I then went straight to England for a few years, just doing, you know, the normal jobs that you would do at that age, bar walk, waitressing, things like that.
The 90s. And, this is the 90s, isn't it? But 95, 96.
Yeah.
Were you in a relationship when you found yourself pregnant in England?
I was, yeah. And I think that pregnancy then brought back all the trauma.
How old were you then?
I was 25.
Okay. Did you have a breakdown?
Looking back on it, I would say so, yes. At the time, I didn't realise it. I turned to drink and drugs. And again, to mask everything. I did Class A drugs. Thankfully, I never did heroin. And I drank heavily. And I then, once I kind of copped on, I suppose, and realised I needed to look after the baby inside me, I gave up the drink and the drugs and focused on the child.
But so was it at that point during the pregnancy that you came back to Cork?
No, I came back to Cork after the baby was born.
So you arrived back to your adoptive mother?
No, I never went back home. So I'm not originally from Cork. I didn't go back home.
So at what point did your adoptive mother threaten to send you to Besborough if you came home? If you darken our door, we'll send you to Besborough. We did everything to get rid of your ingrained genes. You're the same as your birth mother, a disgrace.
So that was when I told them that I was pregnant when I was in England.
You had wished to come back, and they said, you brought shame on us, and that's not what we paid good money for.
Correct, yeah.
But it has to be said that your adoptive father privately was engaging with you during the pregnancy.
Correct. Yeah.
Did you ever wonder why he did all of this privately and didn't do it in, the full headlights of his wife and society? Why he had to do it quietly?
I suppose at the end of the day, he loved her. You know, they were husband and wife. He didn't agree with her, but you know, he would do everything to stand by me and help me as much as he possibly could.
So your adopted mother had a lot of complications in life, obviously.
Very much so.
And a lot of life scarring as well, herself, that she was dealing with and trauma.
Yes, yeah. She had a nervous breakdown before my adoption was even finalised.
And how was the baby when your little baby was born, considering the issues you had with drinking Class A drugs, no complications?
Slightly underweight, but other than that, absolutely perfect.
So that's a miracle, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the rest of your life, you were a single mother at this stage. How did the rest of your life work out for you?
In general, now, good. I think my mid-20s and maybe for a decade up until my mid-30s, they were tough. It was then that I really processed everything I went through. there were dark times, but I did it. And it was probably the best thing for me, because otherwise I really wouldn't have been able to move on and live my life as such.
Did living that life involve the baby?
Of course. Absolutely.
Good for you.
My child is the only flesh and blood that I had ever met.
Mustn't have been easy for you, though.
No. No, but, you know, we all have tough times, and we soldier on, and we get there in the end, and it's always worth it. It's always worth it.
And you've never stopped visiting Besborough, have you? You feel an overwhelming sense of, what, belonging to Besborough?
I do, to some extent, yes. I suppose in that the adoptive home never felt like a home to me. And through the years...
No home has felt like a home to you.
Yeah, nowhere ever felt like a home. And I suppose in a way, even though I can't stand the sight of the actual Besborough house, the area I find very, very calming. It resonates with me. And all the stories of all the suffering that, you know, so many have gone through, again, I can make a connection with that. And I do feel at peace when I'm there.
You never really settled, did you? If you spent, you know, your life in 14 different homes, constantly on the move, you were never sort of at peace in that regard, were you, with the way you could call home?
No, and I think it was masking the issues. It was like I was constantly running from one to another when things got bad. And I wasn't dealing with the issues at the time.
Where do you think the, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of babies who died, if we have a figure of 923, of which we only know of 64 records of where they were actually buried. We hear stories down through the years of babies being buried in shoeboxes on the grounds. Where do you think all of the babies are?
Well, they have to be somewhere. I do believe there are babies on the grounds. There has to be.
There has to be, doesn't there? There has to be. If I've spoken to eyewitnesses on the air down through the decades who saw babies being handed out windows, staff bringing them down to the garden in, you know, sometimes it was a shoebox, sometimes it was a little box that would maybe carry a punnet or two of apples, you know, and things like that.
I don't know if there's an actual mass grave, but they have to be dotted around the place. Definitely.
Which makes it even more important the site itself remains untouched if the bodies are all over the site.
Yeah, or at least untouched until the grounds were investigated.
Okay.
I always felt that that was kind of the paramount issue that was never really addressed. An investigation is paramount and would give concrete evidence to support a CPO, I feel.
A compulsory purchase order. Can I ask you, were you ever curious as to your birth parents? Did you go anywhere with that one, Anne?
I did. I traced my birth mother back in the early 2000s, well before birth info became a thing.
How did that work out for you?
Awkward, to say the least. We did meet, and we met once a year for 10 years, up until approximately 2010.
Okay. I'm just curious about that aspect of your life. I just want to take a quick ad break because I don't want to rush this part of it. Can you hold on and we'll chat again in about 2 minutes' time? Is that all right, Anne?
I can, of course, yeah.
Thanks so much. Text 0868104106. Thank you. When you did meet with your birth mother over the period of those years, did she talk about her life to you as to why she and so many hundreds others went to Besborough to give birth?
She was brought back by the Catholic Crusade from London to Besborough to give birth to me.
Okay, and that would have been an organisation that would help young, pregnant Irish girls.
They wouldn't really have helped in that they would have been flagged that there was a PFI, which would have been pregnant from Ireland. That was the terminology that they used. And they really didn't want them to be a burden on the English system, so they were sent back to Ireland.
And did she talk about that aspect of her life, falling pregnant? No.
No. Any attempts at approaching it was shut down very quick. She didn't want to revisit it.
She couldn't do it. She just couldn't do it. And your adopted parents, after a period, did she pass away then, your mother, your birth mother?
No, she's still alive.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So, but there's no contact at this stage, no?
No. It didn't work out. There was no bond there as such. I felt that there was no draw really. But, it gave me answers. It gave me closure. I don't regret it in the slightest.
And your adopted parents, what of them?
Both are deceased.
Okay. Well, did you stay in touch with your adopted dad?
My adoptive father was hard to trace, and I finally connected with a half sibling through DNA from my birth father's side in 2022. Mm. And my birth father had died the previous year.
Mm. Had his wife predeceased him?
He married, but they are now divorced, and that happened a hell of a long time ago. He never married again.
Okay. So you never had an opportunity to tell him what happened to you as a child?
No.
Would that have been important to you to tell him?
I think so. Mm. Yes, it would have been because, this kind of rhetoric that goes around about adoptees, to give you a better life, and that's the kind of the reasoning behind it. And we don't all get a better.
No, life. You were put in the range and within reach of a predator.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, is it a lovely text coming in of support for you? And it's only right that it should be that way. Here's one in particular. I'll read some others in a minute. Text 0868-104-106. Neil, God love that woman. What a tough earlier life she had. I believe we should all be out protesting with regards to this decision of atrocity in Besborough. We should be chaining ourselves to the gates of Besborough and refusing to leave. This is a stain on our history. Who in God's name would want to live there anyway when beautiful babies could be buried under their homes? Let's get out and protest for all these young women and all those that suffered. What do you make of that?
It's lovely to, that people are supportive of protecting Besborough. I actually think what should be fought for is an investigation. It would also give weight to a judicial review if one was taken.
Yeah, I mean, Besborough should be treated the very same as Tuam was, really,
Correct.
And every single type of investigation, whatever that may be, scans, preemptive digs, things like that, all should be undertaken, really, before anything is ever done with regards to...
I think when the council decided to outsource the responsibility to the developer... they shirked their responsibility.
And what have the developers said in the event of them coming across the remains of babies?
They're meant to stop all work. But it's...
That's cart before the horse stuff. You know that.
And plus as well, no disrespect to the developers, but if the archaeologist had been paid by the developer, that's not independent.
Okay. We need some kind of intervention by City Council and indeed by government on this one. We really and truly do, just to make things right for those that are suffering and those that have history and perhaps a son or a baby, son or daughter buried there. Thank you so much, Anne, for taking the call this morning. I can imagine that revisiting aspects of your life and your childhood is difficult and painful. So I do appreciate it.
Not at all. Thank you very much for having me on, Neil.
Okay, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. We'll pick it up after the break.